Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye Live with The Fedge. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this, put that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody. From Amman, Jordan. I think I'm still in Jordan anyways. No, I am, guys. From Amman, Jordan, this is The Fetch. And this is, June the 15th, 2019. And a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada. And a good late afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones. And, of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web, our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets, may all be well with you and yours. Now, the weather here in Amman has been relatively nice with daytime highs hitting 83 degrees under largely hazy skies. And winds have been a very moderate 10 miles per hour coming out of the west southwest. We are currently sitting at 82 degrees at just after 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Temperatures should start to move down fairly quickly, though, as we head into the evening here. By show time, end time, temperatures should be about the middle 70s. We'll be in the lower 70s throughout the rest of the evening, and we should even get down into the upper 60s come the useful part of the evening, which I usually consider to be about 1 to 2 o'clock in the morning. And our overnight lows should be down to 63 degrees in the hour before sunrise. I just want to say, obviously, good morning, everyone. It's nice outside, but once we start shutting everything off inside, man, temperatures start to shoot up. We were sitting about 79 degrees in here. And again, remember, we're in a non-air-conditioned environment. The humidity's not so bad, by the way. It's okay. But we're sitting now at about 82 degrees in the studio here. I would love to be working at about 75 degrees. That would be really nice, but we just can't quite seem to get down to that level. If you want to join us in the chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com, that's InsideTheEyeLive.com. I'm already there. It's going along okay. It's not humming. Again, we consider 20 people to be humming. We're sitting at about 12 people. I have Salman MG. It looks like Ike over in Germany. Brian Oblivion are just a couple. I see Windmiller, Jim Fire. And that's what I see on the screen. So good morning, everybody. Again, as always, do put a message into the chat room just to let me know how the quality is coming through, just to make sure everything is okay. It wasn't okay. It was actually kind of muffled, wasn't it? All right, that sounds actually a little bit better. Hopefully everything is okay. If you've been paying attention, we have not seen anything posted over at grism.blogspot.com, our main distribution point. And so they normally record all the shows for us, put it up there, put it into our accounts and all. We don't know what's happening over there. We tried to call this morning. So to those of you who have been emailing, complaining, talking, instant messaging me about all of these issues, I really can't help you because I have no information. So unfortunately, we just don't know. And hopefully we will see something posted there. But in the meantime, I'm going to go ahead and try to record the show here. I'll have to edit in some of the things to make it all balanced out and work properly and get out there onto the web properly. But we hope to have the archives back up. Now, we do have last Sunday's, excuse me, we don't have Thursday's. You could always subscribe to the station's archives, of course. It's about $5 a month, I believe. Those are posted typically within 24 hours. So you could always, once again, subscribe at revolution.radio. That's revolution.radio. And they usually have these up and running within about 24 hours. Nighthawk, after the show, maybe we should talk. Maybe I'll go ahead and subscribe myself. But we need to make some type of deal there. Because, as you know, we have our independent distribution. We don't want to violate your personal terms of service. So we will be in touch perhaps after the show, or get in touch with me after the show. Let's see. Anyways, I'm just testing out my record. I don't have recording software from the web, guys. I'm recording everything locally, and I don't have the sound coming from the studio. I'm working off of basically a clock system I have here to do the show. So I'm not able to actually get the bumpers and all that stuff into the recording. So what we'd like to have, of course, is our show opening intro. That's kind of like to set up the show, right? So we're going to try to get that edited in today. And hopefully we'll get some word what's going on out there through our distribution channels, and we can get an idea. Now, I do see from Jim Fire, morning, Dennis, I hear you. That's a good thing. Again, I've actually tried to call Mr. Zap Hopper, everybody, and the phone rang, but I did not get to talk to anybody. He's probably thinking, who the heck's calling me at this time of day, I can imagine. But nonetheless, guys, obviously, it takes a lot of teamwork to make these things go. We're all working for free for the most part, so bear with everybody. We always ask that you have a little bit of patience as we try to get this stuff out. It's not as easy as you think. It's a lot of work to get everything aggregated, curated, uploaded, and all that kind of stuff, links provided, players attached, and all these other things that we do for you here at Inside the Eye Live. So just be patient while we try to work out some other channels. Now, if anybody has, if you can help and assist, send me an email equally, thefetch@insidetheeyelive.com, thefetch@insidetheeyelive.com. Now, we don't have any guests today lined up. We are going to have basically your classic Saturday morning Fetch Rant show, which generally is fairly popular. So we're going to do one of those shows today. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East, especially relative to the Oman tankers. We're going to raise some of those issues. We will talk about immigration. Of course, we've got the Oy Vey moment and the cat report, and who knows what else will get ranted on into the segments there. So stay tuned, sit back, relax. It should be a fun day today. Again, 3 hours of intelligent media for the politically aware. Let's start with the Oman tanker issue. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about who's behind this. Is it the Americans? Is it the Iranians? And, you know, we were starting to look at some of the evidence. We don't like to comment on these issues right away because, quite frankly, I don't trust the media. The Jewish media is simply something that should not, cannot be trusted. I mean, these are the same people that lied us into World War I, lied us into World War II, lied us into the Korean War, lied us into the Vietnam War, lied us into the Iraq War, lied us into the Afghan War, and of course the war in Iraq. So these people are essentially known. They have a history of basically lying to the American people to push through their agenda. And what was really fascinating following the Oman tanker attack was the apparent, again, we don't have evidence for this, but the apparent coordinated efforts by a fairly large number of people that spread the idea that this is Iran, and essentially giving the message that it's time for America to man up and get out there and do things. You know, we got to hit Iran. And I'm like, you know, this is very coordinated. It seems very slick, very coordinated, but it's like very generous of these people to tell the American people or encourage the American people to essentially start supporting some war based on evidence from a press that has never been truthful to the American people and, in fact, is an enemy of the American people. So you watch a lot of this stuff going on in the social media and how it's being used as a force multiplier to try to elevate or accentuate the message of the mainstream media. It's very cynical, and it's very much more organized than you might think. In coordination with the social media efforts to, you know, it's time for you Americans to man up and show us who you are type of stuff. Yeah, isn't that nice of them to volunteer our people for what is essentially an Israeli issue here in the Middle East? Is, you know, the what I call Jewish agitprop. And if you're not familiar with Jewish agitprop is essentially agitating propaganda, basically designed to get you to move in an aggressive and violent way sometimes towards another ethnic group. And what you won't see from us, you won't see a lot of not from me anyways, and it's out there. I'm not going to say it's not out there, and it should be out there more as far as I'm concerned. But what you will see is a lot of things towards Islam that's exceedingly anti-Islam. For instance, you saw one. It says, if you had a choice and, you know, you could push this button and you could destroy Islam forever, basically blow it to bits, would you do it? It had 411 likes on that thing. Basically, it's encouraging people in the West to declare war against Islam. And we have discussed with you many, many times about the eschatology of what's going on here. The Jewish eschatological schooling or thought is that we in the West have to go to war with Islam so that basically we can be destroyed by Islam and Islam can be destroyed by us. And then when the dust all settles, Jews get to be the only sole power left on earth. And then their Moshiach comes and oy vey, Jews get to rule the world. Now, as silly as that sounds, that is the eschatology within the Likudnik Noahide branches of Judaism. Now, of course, it's insane. No one's going to argue that point. Actually, very few people are going to argue that point. And that's because the very same people that believe in these insane eschatological viewpoints, well, a lot of these people are the very same people working in your Congress, inside of your state legislatures, working overtime to criminalize you even being able to talk about Israel, to talk about the Jewish people, to talk about Jewish policies. And of course, that is coming through in this guise of hate speech, in this guise of crimes, hate speech, hate crimes, anti-Semitism, which itself is becoming absurdly, quote unquote, if not criminalized, it's certainly being impinged upon when it comes to your freedom to speak. So a lot of these issues keep going out there. We're watching it unfold. We've been raising the issues to you and educating as much as we can that this is a coordinated global effort largely by the Jewish community. Because it's not 10 organizations, guys. It's dozens upon dozens upon dozens of organizations that are working to keep you from speaking about what's going on. Now, just to head back to the tanker, the Oman tanker issue. The Pompeo, of course, and Trump, and for a lot of people now, at least within the nationalist movement, I saw something a little bit silly the other day. It was a meme that said that Trump was ahead of, and of course, this is coming from the Pechenik crowd, Steve Pechenik and others like him, that Trump, he is an agent. Okay, sorry about that. My cat's working all over keyboards and stuff, and I'm trying to keep things from breaking here. She likes me too much, actually. We'll get that in the cat report. Anyways, back to this Trump meme. Trump is he's supposed to be an agent of the nationalist military, and they helped him come to power, and he's here to basically clean up the swamp and save the day. No, Trump is not clearly a part of the nationalist side of it. Now, they may have been somewhat
motivated to help Trump. I'm not going to argue that point. Could be possible. But to say that Trump is purely a nationalist is actually not true. He is a Zionist. I think that's become plainly clear now. His policies are not in American national interest. Trump's policies are in Israeli national interest. He does basically what the Israelis and Netanyahu wants and needs. And when it comes to what's going on now in the Persian Gulf, and of course, I work here, I live here, I have to be very clear how I say it. You cannot say, believe it or not, the Persian Gulf when you're in Saudi Arabia. You have to call it the Arabian Gulf. If you call it the Persian Gulf, you are creating for yourself a major political foul paw. You're going to put yourself into a situation that if you're in the wrong audience at the wrong time, you're going to destroy your diplomatic reputation. And someone who deals in that realm, who is around this type of situations here, these types of people, you must be very clear. I'm just letting you know, if you're around people within the Gulf, the GCC, you have to call it the Arabian Gulf. And of course, if you're out there inside of the United States in the West, we still call it the Persian Gulf. But the issues we saw with Pompeo and, of course, Bolton and Trump and everybody saying Iran, 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 Iran. Of course, everybody is very quick to point out that, look, Prime Minister Abe of Japan is visiting Rouhani and Khamenei. And it's like, you know what? Why would Iran try to blow up a Japanese and a Dutch tanker while Abe is basically sitting in the guy's office? That's something that the Israelis certainly would do to us, you know, just to sabotage some type of meeting that we were planning. They would do something. Trust me, they've done it so many times. But in this case, guys, why would he do it? And then they're saying, oh, these are limpet mines. Okay, well, first of all, I'm not exactly sure how a limpet mine looks when it comes to its explosive value. What we saw were basically some pixels on a screen that made it look like it was basically a kind of oversized cross sitting there. And the problem with limpet mines, when you get to the mechanics of the military side of it, limpet mines are generally affixed to ships via frogmen. So basically you would have to take like a SEAL team member. He would have to swim with that mine and attach it to the ship. But if you looked at the pictures, the limpet mine is way in the frick up there. It's like 12, 15, 20 feet off the ground or off the surface level, the sea level. How in the heck is that frogman going to get up there? And why would he expose himself to go all the way up there to attach this thing? This thing would have had to have been attached if it were indeed a mine, long before it left the port somewhere. And the interesting point about all this now is that the NHK, and NHK is a Japanese national broadcaster. So you had Trump over, of course, in Japan about, what, a week and a half ago, something to that effect. And, you know, he was probably there to talk about Iran and a few other things. You can imagine that, seeing how Japan and Iran are customers of each other. So what we heard from NHK were statements that absolutely contradict everything the Americans are saying. And the president of the company that operated the tanker said and hinted it was called, the company is called Kokuka Sangyo. The president is Yutaka Katada. And he was speaking at a news conference yesterday, and he said that the tanker was hit well above its waterline and that chances are slim that a mine or a torpedo was involved. Of course, how's the torpedo going to work? It's supposed to go, and then about 15, 20 feet before it's going to hit, it's supposed to be able to jump out of the waterline. Okay, that's a pretty slick piece of technology there. But that's what the Americans are claiming. That's what American intel is claiming, which tells you just how smart American intel can be sometimes. The U.S. military had said it had spotted an unexploded mine being removed from the tanker by the Iranian Navy. But again, how would that mine even get there? It's so, if you look at the ships, it's so high up on the side of the ship. How would it even get there? How, again, it just doesn't make sense. Now, Katada, who is the president of Kokuka Sangyo, he said that the tanker is now headed to a port in Khor Fakkan, which is in the UAE. And he added that its freight of methanol is, of course, going to be transported to a different vessel. But they said, quite frankly, that they saw an airplane off on the distance. They did see a flash of light coming. They saw, in one case, the actual projectile come in and hit the ship. And these are statements coming from actual crew members who were actually saved, rescued, really, not saved, by, I believe, the Iranians. So again, the story coming out of the United States doesn't make sense. It is not being supported within the international community. Again, what we are looking at, though, from a very real point of view, is we have a very rogue fashion of military operatives pulling off this type of operation in the middle of international water. This is a well-financed criminal, organized criminal syndicate. And for the United States, again, if you're going to tell me that Trump is a nationalist, all right, especially when it comes to the U.S. military installed him. Okay, look, it's not the U.S. military that it would have installed him, because if it's the U.S. military, we would expect the U.S. military to be engaging in behavior that's, excuse me, supports American foreign policy first, American interests first. And yeah, it was methanol, guys. I'm getting a message here. No one talked about it. It was a methanol. At least the Japanese tanker was methanol, so it's going to be transported to a different tanker. See, so you got some information from inside the island that they're not talking about. They're just saying it's an oil tanker. No, actually, it was a methanol tanker. It wasn't oil. Anyways, methanol, I'm not sure how that burns, by the way. It's not like crude oil, though. Where were we? The real issue now is that if Trump were an actual nationalist, I'm talking about a real nationalist, he would be working overtime to find out who was behind the attack and absolutely and ruthlessly take these people out. Ruthlessly, guys. That's what a nationalist would do. Somebody who is part of a criminal syndicate cabal will try to cover it up, because that's really what happened here. It is highly unlikely that the Iranians were actually involved here. And so for us within the nationalist community, again, we must avoid ourselves getting entangled into another foreign war that does nothing for us, but certainly helps the Israelis. It's The Fetch, everybody. Thanks for tuning in on this Saturday, June the 15th, 2019. Back with more right after this. Where were we? It's independently run media. And of course, we're part of the Revolution.Radio network. And of course, Revolution.Radio can be found at Revolution.Radio. I know a lot of you pick up the show directly from Revolution.Radio. A lot of you are picking up the show through Inside the Eye Live. And of course, we have all the links that we can possibly think of to allow you to be able to pick up the live stream. It's simulcast over multiple networks now, micro FM broadcasting, some FM stations. So guys, we're doing everything we can to bring this idea called Inside the Eye Live to you as to as big an audience as possible. And that does create a lot of infrastructure requirements. So what we do ask is that you support the network. Again, work your way over to Revolution.Radio. That's Revolution.Radio, and do what you can to basically support the network, because without the network, we don't really have a way to get out and do what we do here. So it's very important that, again, we have a platform to work from. We do live in an era where deplatforming is the name of the game, really. They understand that deplatforming works. You know, you can build up an audience, 200,000-400,000 people, if you're even on YouTube. And then overnight, they can basically take it all away. Just pull the carpet out from under you, and there goes your audience. So I've always known that. I've been getting banned from various forums and talked about it since all the way back in 2009, 10, 11. If you listened, in fact, to my early, it's a classic now, my broadcast on Red Ice Radio in 2011, it's just one of those things I talked about. And it's been going on for that long, and it's gotten a lot worse. So guys, support the platforms that help bring the information to you. It's a very, very critical and important thing to do. So without the platform, we have nowhere to go. Of course, this is sponsored by the ITEL Cat Report, that is sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small. It is independently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, a 9/11 truth advocate, a former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can catch Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. That's 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. And for more information, be sure to visit BlackbirdNineTradingPosts.org. That's BlackbirdNineTradingPosts.org. Cat report is kind of simple. The cats are getting along. I don't know where Pressy is. I had to kick her off of my desk just a few minutes ago because she was making a huge problem here on my desk. Wow, I don't see anything operating here at all, guys. I don't see anything. I'm assuming I'm going out, but I just don't see anything operating on my mixing board at all. That is strange. Like, none of my stuff is working. I just noticed that, by the way. It's like, wow, why is nothing working? Yeah, this is not working. But you hear me. That's a good thing. The mixing board has absolutely nothing working, but you can hear me. That's a good thing. But I actually don't see anything on the mixing board, guys. That's frustrating. Anyways, so basically, guys, as you heard, we're trying to get out of Amman, head back. We're going to try to set up some businesses and stuff in the Philippines. It would be a good place to start because the girls, that's where they're from. They can work there. They don't have to worry about the police because really it's become a really big problem for Filipinas here in Jordan. Basically, no matter what, you're going to get stopped sometimes two times a day. The police are very heavy on trying to clean the city, clean the country of Filipinas. It doesn't matter if you're legal or not. You're still going to get stopped because they wouldn't know whether you're legal. So we're trying to get out just because we feel it's a security issue. It's become very unfriendly in some cases. Now, we're usually pretty strong, but when we looked at it economically, we thought the money you're putting in here, we can put into something that we can control and own and not give it to a country where you're really not welcome anymore. So as part of that move, the cats are included. That's right. The cats are included. And so today I was talking to a couple of the carriers, and one of the carriers that we like to fly, I like to use for my long haul flights. They told me that they just don't have the facilities to manage having a layover situation above 3 hours. And since most layovers for this carrier are between three to five hours, they will not be able to actually transport the cats to the Philippines. So it's like, okay. So we talked to them today. We talked to the freight managers today and said, look, what can you do for us? We really want to get these cats moved. Getting the paperwork in order is not going to be, we don't believe, such a big issue. It's going to be a little bit of an issue, but a big issue. But trying to get the cats moved is going to take an issue with the carriers, actually getting them on the aircraft, getting them paid for, getting them over there, and finding an air carrier that will actually do this. So as of now, we don't have a means to actually get the cats out of here. Not yet. They told us today, in fact, I was talking to one of the freight managers here locally down at the airport, and he told me, look, let me see what we can do to get you an exception to our policy. Let me see what, because they know I fly this airline a lot, so they're trying to help me out a little bit. So they are saying, look, let us try to get this solved for you from our point of view, get you the exception. We're not going to make any promises, but let us call Abu Dhabi, because most things go through Dubai. You know, most of the hubs either go through Dubai or Qatar, sometimes Oman. So we're now looking now to try to get the cats out of here. It's not been solved yet. So right now I've got three cats, Pressy, the white one, which you can see in the chat room. She just loves me to death. And she's here all the time. No matter what, she's basically with me 24/7 if I'm around. Not quite 24/7, but she's here with me a lot. She's always on my desk. She's kind of like One Eye. She's kind of cool. So I want to take her. She's very, very, very pregnant right now. And she's waddling around the house. It was kind of cute. You know, we've got like these bars, not really bars, but we have these metal grated. It's not a grate. It's weird. Let's just call it bars. It's not really bars, but it's just some type of metal design there to protect the window so people can't break into your house. And the other cats can just kind of walk through because they're okay. But she's so fat because she's so pregnant. She actually had to struggle to get through. It's like, what are you doing? And wow, Night Off just sent me a message. He's got 18 cats and 2 dogs. Yeah, I can imagine if I had a big farm and I had places to keep them, I can imagine having a lot of cats. It's not easy to feed them all, of course. That takes a lot of effort, for sure. But hopefully, you know, if you got a lot of cats, you're able to feed them. But anyways, it's been a difficult time for us trying to figure out how to get this move done. We are getting our dates narrowed down. It will not be till a couple months still, less than 2 months actually now worth the figuring. So we're trying to get all of it worked out. I will go basically for 2 weeks. I don't know what it is, how long it's actually physically going to be because I don't know. And then, of course, back to Saudi Arabia, we will be broadcasting live from Riyadh come September-ish. So we're working on all these details. It's not quite been the vacation that I would like it to have been. Anyways, this is, again, the ITEL Cat Report, sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small. And again, it's independently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted again by Frederick C. Blackburn. And you can catch Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening, again, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network, and I will do it for the Cat Report. I think I've got this darn thing debugged here, folks. Let me try it now. See, it's not easy, man. I try to keep these shows going, but it ain't easy all the time, guys. Let's see here. It is now time for the Oy Vey.
Oy Vey. Oy Gewalt. It's like another show.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
Oy vey. How do you run by Jews? They don't like it. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boyish tears.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
The Oy Vey Moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, Updated, Expanded, and Uncensored is now available from Andy himself at andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media. And this week's Oy Vey Moment is going to come to us. They're going to let me in. Yeah, they are going to let me in. You know, all these paywalls. It's funny. I saw something the other day coming to us from, I don't know where it was, just some commentary on the media and how the media, the mainstream media, is really dying. They're having a really hard time selling product, getting people to really come and read what they have to say. And of course, a lot of these mainstream media, the major media outlets, they've started to put things behind a paywall. It's like, guys, why would we pay you for you to abuse us with crap reporting, fake reporting? And I'm like, man, you guys got to be some of the dumbest people in business going, you know, if you just start doing good quality news work, people will come and listen. But you guys in the mainstream media, you're putting out agenda driven drivel. I can say that in one word, almost, agenda driven drivel. There you go. That's actually pretty good. Anyways, looking at here, there's a story coming out of the Seattle Times. So we're going to go up into Washington. And this is written by a Daniel Beekman. He looks like a complete geek, some leftist nutcase is what he looks like. Maybe he's a great guy, but when you look at his opening line here, you know this guy just doesn't have a full head of whatever up there. The FBI, he says, is made aware, has been made aware of threatening anti-Semitic online posts about a candidate for Seattle City Council. The American Jewish Committee has condemned the post, and other candidates have spoken out. Well, the anonymous posts were made on the website 8chan about District 2 candidate Ari Hoffman, and reported to the FBI by an organization that monitors anti-Semitic and other online activity. Well, think about it again, guys. Read that very carefully or listen to it very carefully. The anonymous posts were made on the 8chan website about District 2 candidate Ari Hoffman and were reported to the FBI by an organization that monitors anti-Semitic content and other activities, that monitors anti-Semitic and other online activity. Well, okay, what did they just tell you there? They're telling you that they're basically, what do we say? They're basically spying on you. Literally, they're spying on you. So the FBI says is made aware of the threats against Mr. Hoffman. Whether they were actual threats or not, who knows? It's a freaking website. We are in regular contact with local authorities and will take appropriate action if information develops to suggest a potential federal violation. Well, you know, I'm not sure how this all plays out, you know, at the end of the day, because why is it that only Jews are protected? Why is it that whenever a Jewish person says something that encourages violence against anybody, especially white European Americans or, let's say, British citizens, why is it that they're just simply allowed to walk on as if nothing happened? You ever wonder why it's always Jews who are being protected? Jews, 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 and nobody else. It seems a little bit curious. Perhaps it's very, very curious why this might be happening. And then you start to look at the political process and coming out of Washington. And you don't even catch this. This is the funny thing about this type of story. You're not actually seeing this in U.S. newspapers because they don't want to talk too much about it. But you certainly see it plastered over virtually every single Israeli newspaper. And in this case, they're talking about what's called a bipartisan, which means Jewish dominated and controlled, resolution condemning anti-Semitism, unanimously passing the Senate. And that, of course, is the U.S. Senate. And the move took place 3 months after the U.S. House of Representatives was criticized for watering down and passing a resolution condemning anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Well, to the American Congress, who do you work for? Do you work for the American people or do you work for the Jewish people? Just come out and tell us. That's all we're asking you at this stage. Because for those of us who are Americans who have our opinions about Jewish people, Jewish politics, Jewish policies, we have every right to voice them. Now, if you're going to tell us that Jews have determined that we Americans no longer have a right to speak, then why don't you come out and say, look, we work for Jews, and Jews have instructed us to pass these laws, and consequently, you are no longer allowed to speak about Jews openly in public. Why don't you come out and let's just stop all this pandering and meandering around the legalese and just tell the American people you're below the Jewish people, because that's what these laws basically are saying. Can you imagine having a law to protect your little community of whatever you want to identify as and you happen to be European natives? Can you imagine that? You know why you don't need to be protected? Because you don't have any power. You're already powerless, so who needs to protect you? You don't have any seat at the table. You're not a lightning rod for anything because you're not even able to make policy that would make you a target. That's the whole issue here. Why is it that those in power feel a need to pass laws to make people like them? Oh, you don't like us? You're anti-Semitic. Well, you know, the very first thing that Jewish people did when they took over Russia and created, quote unquote, the Soviet Union, they passed laws that forbade people from being anti-Semitic. So again, we are seeing the same policies by our Congress that the very well documented Jewish Bolshevik monstrosity engaged in. We're seeing the exact same thing now being done as Jews have risen to power in the United States. It's estimated that some 90 plus members of the American Federal Congress have leanings or basically Jewish centric. 45 of these are estimated to be actual dual citizens, which means that they don't serve the American people. They serve Jewish interests first. What is good for Jews? They always ask us, but you're supposed to not even talk about these issues. How can you create a viable political solution to anything if Jews are sitting there lording over words, and they're not even their words? Their language is Yiddish, a gibberish. And ours is English. And they're lording over our language as somehow they have a right to tell us what we can and can't say in our own language. Now, this isn't unusual, folks. In Turkey and Germany, in some cities now, they don't even allow the German kids to speak German and learn German in their schools. And that's the same problem they had during the Weimar Republic. German kids were no longer allowed to even read and write in German. They had to use a different language. Well, in Germany now, some districts aren't even allowing German kids to speak German. They're forcing them to speak Turkish. And they're supposed to learn the Turkish language inside of their own country. And you wonder, when all this is said and done, why is it that Jewish people become so despised? How would Jews like it? Imagine, put Jewish people in our shoes. How would they respond if we said, you cannot read Hebrew anymore? You can't learn your history anymore. You must learn our history. You must learn what we tell you to do. Otherwise, you're going to be criminalized. Do you think the Jewish people for one second are going to stand for that? No, they would become one of the greatest whining societies that the world has ever known. They would make today's whining society look like child's play. They would scream and, oh my goodness, it would be so bad. It'd be like, it was going, gosh, can we just put these guys out of their misery? They're terrible. But guys, it's a serious issue here. Ted Cruz, who is basically known to be an Israeli firster, he said, this is a shameful legacy. And it makes it all the more incumbent that we as a Senate speak in one voice and stand resolved that the United States condemns and commits to combating all forms of anti-Semitism. Well, again, who does Ted Cruz work for? Does he work for the American people? Or is he working for Jewish power in America? And of course, we should all understand now that we really do have a major problem on our hands, and that's Jewish power. No other people can engineer this type of crap as far as legislation goes. That's the Oy Vey moment, everybody. Back with more right after this. It's Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Vetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. It's June the 15th, 2019. Wherever you're listening out there, again, hope all is going well with you and yours. Pressy, my cute little white cat, has just decided to join me again. And she's not quite trained like One Eye was. You know, One Eye knew never to step on the computers. He was pretty smart. I kind of trained him on that. This little one, she's young. She's probably just over a year old. And she's not, I haven't had her since birth, you know. So she's not as trained. She likes to just hop up and just kind of walk on everything. And sometimes she'll just walk all over the keyboard. Then you just don't know what she's done, you know, and you can't figure out what she did, and then you don't know where to fix it. So sometimes I got to turn my computer off and on just to reset everything. So she just jumped up here on me and then right onto the keyboard. And it's like, come on, man, come on.
So I kind of picked her up and tossed her behind. So she's cleaning herself right now. So she loves to be with me. I don't know why. I think she just had some dinner, though. And she just came back, said, okay, dinner's done. I'm going to go back. I'm going to go relax and listen to Inside the Eye Live. It's kind of a cool thing. Telephone lines, 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Chat room is not humming yet. It's getting there, but again, InsideTheEyeLive.com. That's InsideTheEyeLive.com. Click on the live chat button. It's actually, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be moving a little bit slow over there today. They're talking a little bit about the Canterbury Tales and English and a few other things, Frisian, the Frisian language, and Old German and things of that nature. So it's probably would be kind of an interesting discussion if you like linguistics and things of that nature. I do. This is kind of like my business, so I kind of like that kind of stuff. Let's see, immigration. Let's talk about immigration because immigration's a big deal and it shows you the difference, really. As we're going to highlight this, it will give you the difference between Italy and the United States. What is a real nationalist government and what is a fake nationalist government? Italy has something known as their Council of Ministers, and that is basically the principal executive organ for the Italian government. And they have actually authorized now a new security decree, and it was drawn up by Matteo Salvini, who was the populist interior minister. And it is now going to restrict or allow this, what they're going to now allow is to restrict the activities of NGOs for transporting illegal migrants into the country. So they're going after the NGOs who are responsible for trafficking of humans into and through Italy. Now, according to a particular report from Il Giornale, I'm not had to say that one, new provisions grant the Italian government the authority to seize sea vessels from civil society groups which breach government sanctions or that try to illegally enter Italy's territorial waters with illegal migrants on board. And that's, of course, a huge step because essentially Italy being one of the closest countries of destinations, you would have these human trafficking boats linked often and paid for by various organizations, which would be traceable back to the Soros foundations of some sort. And they would just pick people up off Libya. They would be coordinated with the human traffickers. And then they would just kind of plow their boats up to Italy, say, hi, look who we saved. Another 1,000 immigrants for you to deal with, Italy. Ain't that a great thing to do? And so one portion now of this security decree is actually going to provide what's called intelligence and police services, meaning their intelligence forces. That would be like our FBI, but our FBI doesn't do anything but cover everything up. But anyways, it's going to provide for more freedom to use wiretaps and undercover operatives to fight illegal human trafficking into Italy, which is actually all a very good thing. Now, Article 1 of the new security decree explicitly states that the interior minister, which would then be Salvini, now has the authority to restrict or prohibit the entry, transit or parking of ships in the territorial sea, except in the case of military ships or ships in non-commercial government service for reasons of public and security and order. So that is all very, very good. Apart from having their boat seized, captains are also going to have to face fines of between 10,000 to 50,000 euros. And there is a German woman, Pia Klemp. She's basically a human trafficking ship, and she helped bring in over 1,000. She basically trafficked in over 1,000 migrants, and she is now on trial in Italy, and she faces 20 years in prison for her human trafficking endeavors out on the open ocean. So this new decree comes again after 2018, the Migration and Security Decree, which got rid of humanitarian residency permit and invested several million euros into funding deportations of illegal migrants. So last year was a good year for Italian nationalists.
But the Italian government, of course, isn't the only one in Europe that's doing this. Also, you had the Hungarian government, and they put in a piece of legislation called the Stop Soros Bill. And that is going to make it possible to imprison NGOs and individuals who also help to facilitate illegal immigration. Now, you understand what's going on here. These are two nationalist governments. I don't want to hear about Trump being the nationalist when half of his efforts are going solely to supporting Israel. You can't fix America if, I don't know, half of your energy is going to basically doing whatever the Israelis tell you, and the Israelis are sabotaging you every step of the way. But here in Italy and Hungary, we are seeing some very strong progress, some very good return to a rule of law. And that really does contradict or stand out in contradiction, I should say, to what is happening in the United States. Now, again, the big story here is that Captain Pia Klemp, she's a 35-year-old woman, they're going after her. They are basically going after her. So she says sea rescue missions have now been criminalized. It's true, because basically they're not sea rescue missions. They are what they are. They're human trafficking schemes with the intent to flood Europe with non-integratable rubbish, basically, that will basically destroy Western civilization. Now, Klemp, now this woman, is banned from sailing along the Italian coast due to her activism. Her comments to Basser Zeitung, Klemp addressed the notion that sea rescues like the ones she did are in any way motivating for refugees to come to Europe. Ma'am, look, Klemp, you're part of a human trafficking scheme. Get out of our face, man. You're just part of a human trafficking scheme. 20 years is not enough, quite frankly, because you should be responsible. This woman, Klemp, should be responsible for the crimes of anybody that she helped facilitate into Europe. And if people die, well, you know what? In America, we should string her up. I don't care. Klemp would have been in violation, it says, of UN law of the sea if she didn't help migrants. But again, this is all window dressing. We are not going to play the semantics game at this stage. Meanwhile, if you go to the United States, each year, roughly 4 million young Americans join the workforce. That means we have 4 million Americans graduate from either high school or college, and they are ready to go to work. They need a job. But the federal government imports 1.1 million legal immigrants every year. And then they refresh a resident alien population of roughly 1.5 million white-collar visa holders, including approximately 1 million H-1B workers and approximately 500,000 blue-collar visa workers. Now, that 1.5 million visa pool, those are jobs that Americans aren't getting. And what's worse is that we are giving our high-tech jobs, places like at Twitter and Facebook and Google, these are going to Indians who have absolutely no respect for our Western values, who will eagerly work against our own internal interests to serve their corporate masters because they don't have the same egalitarian view towards freedom of speech and ethics and integrity that you would expect in an American educated graduate. I'm talking about American, European American. These people don't care. They just don't care. Ethics is not the main game here. They've been caught bragging so many times about Twitter and elsewhere, how they just shadow ban us. How is it that we in America are allowing these scumbags from, excuse my language here, but literally from a moral point of view, these scumbags from India determining what we can and can't say inside of our own web environment here in the United States? Why are we allowing this type of behavior? Trump should be ruthlessly, if he were a real nationalist, he should be destroying the H-1B process. But the fact is Trump is working for two things: high finance, which is Jewish, and he's working for what? Israel. And he's basically come out and said it. I work for Israel. I don't work for you Americans. You guys are stupid. He said that in his own direct or indirect way. He says, I work for Israel. I don't work for America. Oh, I'm trying to make America great again. Okay, why don't you start getting rid of all of these H-1B visas and start getting Americans back to work, American, young Americans, so they can start families and have a job that will help them to buy a house and move forward with their lives and actually start to, hey, oh my goodness, have families even, right? Now, aside from the H-1B visa, the government prints out more than 1 million work permits of foreigners aside from H-1B. It tolerates about 8 million illegal workers in America, and it does absolutely nothing towards companies for employing hundreds of thousands of illegal migrants. Now, let me tell you how it works over here in the Middle East. The ministries of labor have their own investigation teams. And they work various industries like the salon business, paper packaging businesses, food processing businesses, construction businesses. And they have dedicated teams and they have a lot of undercover agents. So if you're working, let's say, in a salon, they will go into that salon and they will just, you know, observe. And if they see somebody who is a foreign national, it's kind of easy to see what a foreign national is, especially over here. They simply go back to their office at night and they say, okay, there was a Filipino working here. Does this company have any registered foreign employees with this company? No. Okay. So they'll go back and they'll build a small case against that person. Next thing you know, they bring the police and they arrest the person, throw them in jail. It's a 3,000 JD fine here. I don't know how much it is. It's huge in Saudi. It's actually huge if you're caught in something like this in Saudi. But it's not going against the employer. You know, the employer doesn't care. The employer just flushes you out, pays your ticket, and they get rid of you. Seriously, it works like that. You caught them. All right. No, we're not going to pay the 3,000 JD fine, which is close to $5,000. So here's the ticket. It's a lot cheaper to pay for the ticket. They pay for the ticket and the girls are sent home or the guys are sent home. We've known so many. Emily was actually in that situation. That's why I told her, don't work in these places, man. You're crazy. Don't do it. That's how it works here. But in America, they just don't do anything. I mean, I heard something to the effect that they've put like, I don't know, 10,800 illegals back into America just the past month. Something like that. Some ridiculous figure. It's probably more than that. So essentially what we have in America is a situation where they're inflating, of course, their labor supply. That boosts economic growth for who? The investors. Because the money flows what? Back to them. It's basically a income redistribution scheme. If they can deflate wages by importing a ton of people that drive wages down, that's money they get to keep. This is antithetic to what America really was about back when we were building the nation in the 30s. Henry Ford was very specific. He said, look, what's the secret to your success? I pay my people as much as I can possibly pay them. In return, they have money and they can buy from me. And of course, they have money elsewhere to buy what they want. But that's what fuels growth, is putting money back into the hands of the consumer. We're in a situation now where the 1%, which is largely 80% Jewish, which is not a joke. It's about that. The 1% is about 80% Jewish in America. So you can argue that the 1% is Jewish. And you would not be lying. You would actually be very accurate. And then you wonder why you see all these bills going to support, quote unquote, fighting anti-Semitism. Because the fighting of anti-Semitism is what? Fighting against the 1% who are what? Who are Jewish. That's how the game is being rigged here. Politics isn't serving the people. Politics is serving those who have money. It's a moneyed, it's whoever oils the system. That's who's getting paid, or that's who's getting the laws put in their favor. So essentially, we have a Jewish elite system, which pays its people as little as possible because it's their moral and ethics to just cheat people as much as possible. They're driving in thousands upon thousands and millions of workers into the United States, flooding the labor market. We get what? We get cheap labor on the blue collar skilled labor, and we get cheap labor on the white collar type of jobs out there. Our young kids aren't able to actually, and of course, we know there's not a lot of, we got a lot of stupid kids coming out of college, but we have a lot of great kids too. And they need a proper type of job to help them there, and they can't get work. Consequently, we got these huge wealth gaps because of greed. So the war here isn't necessarily about the 1% and the 99%. The truth is, it is a war being waged by the Jewish 1%. And go run the numbers. Understand precisely what I'm talking about here. America has become a Jewish oligarchy just as much as the Soviet Union has. And they're using legalese to ensure their profits. Look at what's happened, for instance, inside of the pharmaceutical industry and the number of people killed and doctors being arrested and people actually being thrown in jail and having their kids taken away from them just because an industry largely run by Jewish people, the pharmaceutical industry, wants to ensure that they can inoculate you and maybe destroy your life and your family. There was a story came out just the other week or the other day, in fact. Some girl, like 9, 10 years old, they gave her a flu shot, some HPV flu shot. Half her brain was eaten away within about 48 hours. Half of her brain. How is it that we allow this level of genocide, quite frankly, against us within our midst? That's what's happening here. The doctors, the lawyers, the hospitals in many cases, the pharmaceutical companies for sure. Everywhere we look, they're killing you. You're getting sprayed like bugs up in the sky. Thank goodness I don't see that here, folks. I don't have to live with that. Thank goodness for that. I just don't have to live with it. I'm sure hoping I don't have it where I go. I would hate to, quite frankly, live in a world where I see chemtrailed planes everywhere. Because a nationalist movement, guys, a nationalist movement, the military would shoot these planes down. That's what a nationalist government would do. They wouldn't tolerate some quasi, quote unquote, secret organization out there spraying their population for no known reason. And they've never publicly debated it with us to tell us why it's necessary. A nationalist government would start to take away and start to slowly, I'm not saying you have to do it overnight, but wind down the H-1B visas. Saudi's doing it. Seriously, Saudi's doing it. Every country does it, everybody. Every country is doing this. This is not like this is a secret. The problem you have is you have organizations in America, largely Jewish. They are, I'm sorry, but they're largely Jewish, not lying here, who are fighting tooth and nail to ensure that there is mass immigration into America. And when you look at it from a Jewish point of view, Jews say, well, you know what? We are basically a merchant class. We basically broker information and goods between one group to another. So if we have lots and lots of various groups out there working here inside of America, not only do we not stand out if we look like, you know, some clown with our, you know, our box hanging off our forehead, you know, we're just like just one of the other clowns that are here. Because there's so many basically United Nations style clowns out there. We're, you can call Americans clowns in some areas where we go. You know, it's like we're dressed like clowns, okay? No problem. You can call us a clown. I'm not going to be worried, or at least too much worried about that. But the issue here is that Jewish people, they survive and thrive in areas where there are multicultural environments because they can basically hide. And because they're reasonably smart, they can trade much more effectively between all the various groups. Some of them are ethical. but a lot of them are not. So to them, to flood our countries, it's not in our interest. And that's the point people got to understand. It's not in the national interest, the national interest, to allow Jews to destroy our countries. And that's where we're at today. We have allowed the Jewish community basically a unilateral right to do whatever they want to the demographics of our country. You know, I saw some like stats, $3,000 here for $4,000, $5,000, $6,000. And it's not just here, but it's Australia and London, where the migrants are being given so much free money, free wealth. And the older people are being kicked out and booted out onto the streets to basically die away in ignominy. Is it ignominy? I don't know. I can't say that word. So guys, think about this whole process here. Bipartisanship simply means Jewish controlled of that legislation. When you hear about the anti-Semitic fighting anti-Semitism, it's really fighting the ruling elites of this country. They don't want you to be able to criticize their policies. They don't want you to criticize their economic interests, which are predatory upon you. It's a war. And it's sad, actually, that it's come down to this. It's come down to the point now where Jews are saying there's no more discussion. There will be no more discussion. And that gives rise to the radical side of things. And it's going to be hard because there's so many people out there that want a chance, that want a future. And Jews are saying you don't have a right to a future. You don't have a right to make money. You don't have a right to voice your political opinion. You just have to just shut up and do what we Jews tell you to do. And that's a very dangerous environment. And no matter how we word it, Jews want to claim it's quote unquote anti-Semitic. Well, good luck. I don't care. Let's deal with the issues. Because the issues are what are the important point here. Jews have been using the anti-Semite canard now for, my goodness, 70 years, 80 years. It's time for us to put it to bed. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. Just want to remind everybody the telephone line's 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. And of course, the chat room, which I haven't checked in a while, insidetheeyelive.com. That's insidetheeyelive.com. Quiet day today. Must be a nice day out there. I don't know what's going on, but guys, must be a quiet day. You know, Blackbird 9, let's first take this call. We do have a call coming in. I think it's come in, or if not, just try again. It dropped real fast. That would be, there it goes. Let's see here. There it goes. I see you. And coming from the 215 area code, hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Morning, Fetch. This is Mark the Spark here.
Mark, how you doing? How's your Saturday?
Oh, it's pretty good. Weather's mellow. I wanted to bring something to your attention, to you and your listeners. Maybe you're already familiar with what's going on here, but this brings really good detail to the to the issue of Israel. And let's see if I can find it here. What did I do with it? Okay, here we go. Let's see if I can find it.
And you know what it's like to do live radio, man. You're like, man, I got to find that thing.
Yeah, I just had it a minute ago. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Where is it at? It had to do with, here it is. Okay, the title, now this is on Republic Broadcasting as one of the articles. How neocon billionaire Paul Singer is driving the outsourcing of jobs to Israel.
Yes.
And now I'm trying to bring up the detail of it. But anyway, it's really good. It's very lengthy. It goes into the background of how, okay, so we have this Unit 8200 developed, I believe, in the late 70s wherein Israel's young men and women who are conscripted to go into the military, everybody has to serve. Well, then many of them are selected to go into the Unit 8200, which basically, from what I gather, is preparing them to infiltrate corporations and get into high positions of power and influence and decision making. And meanwhile, while our guys and gals are sent off to on the front lines of going to war for them, so they're at little risk. Anyway, this article goes into how Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, they've many of them have shut down their closing facilities in the United States, you know, putting our people out of work. But then they send the work over to Israel and build new facilities so the Jews can go to work. And this is a really, really good article. There's a lot of good articles right now on RBN right now.
Yeah, you're talking.
This is really good.
I know it's in full. I don't know exactly everywhere it's at, but I pulled it off of mintpressnews.com. And how neocon billionaire Paul Singer is driving the outsourcing of U.S. tech jobs to Israel. And exactly, yeah, you're right. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, just in passing on Inside the Eye Live Primetime. But yeah, it's a serious issue. Mark, obviously it's a big issue. It's not just the H-1Bs, but it's skimming some of the really cream stuff off. And what's really not being said here is the stuff in Israel is all about the counterintelligence or the intel gathering stuff, you know, the sniffing, the snooping, security. Netanyahu has been very vocal lately about how Israel is going to be at the front line of internet security. So basically what they're doing is perhaps they are creating not just like the Stuxnets and various viruses that can go and infect the world, but they are then looking also to create the counter antidotes. And that is something that's not being raised in this debate, but that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's good for business, right?
Yeah, of course.
Problem, reaction, solution. They create the problem. They get a reaction, then they have the solution. The whole thing is just it's a rigged game. It's creative destruction, money making operation for our creative destruction. So, you know, if you're going to take somebody down, might as well make some money on the side while you're doing it, right?
Of course. And of course, at the same time, they're making a ton of subsidies from the United States government for their operation. So why is it we're paying these people to basically start offshoring our business or our work?
Right. And according to Jeff Rentz calculated it, that we're at least sending them $10 million a day. The latest deal that we're, you know, for support for Israel, it calculates to $10 million a day.
It's more than that. No, see, the thing is, there's two sides to this. There's the government sanctioned side, and then there's the NGO side. And the NGOs, they have their own figures. And when you put it all together, it's about $28 billion a year.
Oh, boy.
Okay, $28 billion. You know, because you're talking about everything. Like, you know, some guy, I used to know a guy that was, we called him a grave chaser. And his job, I mean, this was his job. He was a Jewish guy. His job was to befriend old, dying Jewish ladies so that they would basically will their property and investments and money to Friends of Beersheba Hospital. And then that money would go to the hospital in Israel. So essentially they were just funneling off all this money from America when people died and shifted over to Israel. Beersheba Hospital.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of these scams going on. And we're not, right, as American tax.
Scam upon scam.
Yeah, and it's all taxpayer. Art. It's all taxpayer funded art. Here. We're not getting any value to it.
Right. Art in Philadelphia, who's a little bit older than you and I. You and I are about the same age. I think we're about a year apart. He's in his mid to late 60s, and he grew up with all this, and he's the one that has the website called noplaceforcorruption.com.
Oh, wow.
And when I went to his site several years back, I mean, it connected a lot of dots, but he told me about, and he's usually on Rick Adams show. But I've talked with him personally. He told me that the Accenture, the company Accenture, is the one in charge of, you know, the H-1B visa people are coming over and they're working for Accenture. So Accenture is a subcontractor to the government. And who knows how many wheeling and dealings they're doing. And I also read an article recently about, I mean, the $600 hammer that we learned about in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Now is, get this, there was an article I read that a half-inch metal rod, which costs $42 to make, the subcontractor is charging the government $4,300 and something for that rod. And I wonder if the Jews are in on that business, you think?
Guaranteed. I used to be in the defense business and they'd be coming around shopping their wares for me. So guaranteed that, sure.
Well, that's interesting that you said that, because so it used to be that it was like an open bidding for the government contracts. But is that still the case, or is it, or have they wired it up and wired it in, themselves in?
I can't say out? I've been out of it since 1996. Now that was probably my last actual bid where I participated, 95, 96. So I really am not in a position, but most of it is actually open source. But you know, if it just things slip through, or you're the only guy with the print and you are getting sole sourced because you're the only guy with the print in the whole world, then yeah, sometimes it can be go out as a sole sourced item, and then people just are making gravy on it. And that's just the way it works. That works everywhere in the world, by the way. It's not just America. If you can go make some money off the government, you're going to do it. Trust me.
Right. Well, and I have a older friend, he's a Vietnam veteran, and his son works in D.C. and he has some connection with the process. And he told his dad that if it's less than $10,000, if it's a contract for an item less than $10,000, the government doesn't scrutinize it. Isn't that interesting? So there's no scrutiny at all.
Yeah, they have the same stuff here, except for it's like 200,000. If it's below 200,000 rial, Saudi rial, which is like divided by four, what's that? $50,000? If it's below $50,000, it doesn't get scrutiny here for the most part. You can actually just sign the checks off. But once it goes above 200,000, it actually has to get Ministry of Finance approval. You have to get the Ministry of Finance to approve the contract. You just can't sign contracts anymore. They're trying to shut down the corruption here.
Then it's interesting. So maybe Accenture's bringing some of these H-1B visa people over from India, wherever, to basically all they do all day is fill out contracts, and then maybe they submit them. They teach them how to fill out bids, and then they submit as many as they can, just like, you know, just an onslaught. And because they know that some of them are going to go through, some of them might get kicked out, but a lot of them are going to go through. I'll bet you that's just my take on it. Maybe what's happening there. But the other thing is like the F-35. My sense of it is that from the get-go, that was a design. It's basically a golden goose that lays a lot of golden eggs for Lockheed Martin. My take on it, I may be way off. My take on it is Israel's behind it, and they got the fix. They got the fix because they put a bug in it for everybody else, but they got the fix. They got a superior – it is a superior aircraft if it works, right? Mm. But maybe they got the, maybe they had the fix wired in already, you know? I mean, you know – but they got because that gives them a superior aircraft, and they also have the back door that they can switch off there anybody that would go against them with the same platform. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I certainly would agree with this as a possibility. Same thing with Boeing, by the way. When you look at the Boeing 737 MAX, it's still grounded. It's not expected to be able to take off now till I think December in the United States is what they're talking about. We had a plane fly from Ireland to Germany just the other day, which was a 737 MAX. It was turned away at German airspace. They did not allow it into its airspace. And Boeing, you know, they've gone to this full diversity thing. You know, we need a diverse workforce. And essentially, they've engineered that thing to fly straight into the ground. I mean, there's no other way to say it.
if this thing works the way it does. But what's not being talked about is they've also, they have a hijacking override system, which essentially makes it to where the pilots cannot actually control that aircraft. They're not strong enough to pull on it to make the elevators.
That would be a perfect fit for if the enemy wanted to take down.
Being thought here is that the Israelis, because there were some UN people on each of these aircraft, and since Jews really don't care for human life, they really don't, because they don't see us as humans, so there's no point to worry about in their eyes. There is some talk that really, no, this ACOC or whatever it's called, the auto elevation program, it's not that at all. This was actually hacked, and the Israelis just flew these things into the ground. So again, America.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, that's
so
what's being.
So they're using a jinx in the program to be the facade to cover their
correct
their real operative intent, which correct. Is to take down planes at will.
Correct.
Wow.
So essentially, the rumor here is that, no, these were probably hacked by the Israelis and they just flew them into the ground. So.
Well, then what about the other platforms? If they got it for that one, did they have it?
Well, that's the only one that this is actually on. This is the one they actually got this new system on right now, to our knowledge. So, you know, it's a case where it's just, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you Americans are so stupid. You know, I'm looking at it from an American point of view, but we Americans are so stupid. We're killing our business, our opportunity, because of an enemy sitting there in Tel Aviv. And then you're outsourcing all of our top key jobs in the IT sector, security sector, hacking sector, to the Israelis, and giving them unparalleled capabilities that not even we're going to have, because we're giving off the best and the brightest over to Israel.
Yeah. And then I've noticed how Netanyahu is becoming more brash about it. He's more, you know, it's like very matter of fact, like, you know, I mean, it's like they're flaunting it in our face. I mean, is there anybody paying attention at higher levels of our government to pay attention?
Well, no, they are. And our government is taken over by the Israelis. I mean, we have an occupied government now. We do not have an American government. That's bottom line. We don't have an American government. When you have bipartisan support, remember, bipartisan is only what Jews want to see go. They're the only group that can drive it through. So just look at the bipartisan legislation. That's Jewish interest right there. And every single one of these bipartisan resolutions, statements, whatever, benefit only Jews, not the rest of us. It's an occupied government. What Trump's doing right now relative to Iran, he's just saying what Tel Aviv says. It's the same thing. There's not even any semblance of divergence from a U.S. policy and Israeli policy now. They're one and the same. Yeah. Whatever Netanyahu says and the Israelis say, we're saying the exact same thing. Iran's a terror state. You know what? We should be more nuanced than that as a great power. Why are we talking like this?
By the way, Fetch, I didn't call in last week. I meant to ask you, have you heard about Trump's new book?
No.
He's working on it right now. And actually, Jared Kushner is a co-author. Now he's known for his original book, The Art of the Deal.
Right.
Well, his latest, his sequel to that, again, co-authored by, who knows, it might be actually ghostwritten by Jared Kushner, but I think it's co-authored. Anyway, the new book is called The Art of the Steal.
Okay.
it's a rig. It's a rig. It's set up, right? I mean, Trump is, there's some that are saying Trump's doing, I mean, he's done some good things, but these things he's doing, I don't know. Is he totally controlled, or did they let him do
foreign policy? 100%. 100%.
Foreign policy, 100%.
100%. Okay, he just flatlined the ability of GMO companies to essentially do whatever they want, and he took away all government oversight. So basically, the GMO industry can do whatever they want to the food supply, and we have no ability to use government resources to check them and counter them. So,
by the way, I want to ask you something.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you there. I want to ask you something about Cargill Industries, which happens to be based out of, Minneapolis.
Yeah, Minneapolis.
I was in Minneapolis in 1998, and it's a beautiful city. It's got a city park in within 6 blocks in any direction. It's beautiful during the summer. I wouldn't go there in the winter. It's too darn cold. But what I've noticed, now this is 1998, Fetch. Mm-hmm. I go just a little ways from downtown, and I notice these three high-rise apartment buildings. And I thought, wow, these are, they're kind of strutting out, and it's like they're like 20 stories each. And I go, as I get closer, I notice some black people. And then I notice another one, and they're everywhere. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know there's this many African Americans in America here, from America. No. They're all Somalians. That was in 1998. And from what Rent said the other night, was there's like now 120,000 Somalians?
They should, every single one of these should be kicked out. I swear, every single one. Do it as humane. Every single one of them should be kicked out of the country. Do it humanely as you want. But this is not a culture that can blend in with our culture.
Right. Well, and what I'm saying is, who's running Minnesota? It seems like, is Cargill behind this? I mean,
well, Cargill for sure is. I don't know. I mean, obviously it's Minnesota, but Cargill is one of these multinational companies that just cannot be trusted. In my book, I've had dealings with Cargill when I was serving on a chondroitin sulfate technical committee in the 1990s, and Cargill was there giving their opinion, and I was giving an opinion from my factory, which was actually out of China, but I was putting forward the idea, not the Chinese. I was putting forward this, and then you had the Rexall people putting their stuff, and we lost. Our side lost. We could not compete against Rexall and Cargill. And so I've had my dealings with them, and some of what they were voting for and putting forward was basically admitting to me that knew something at the time that they were basically putting garbage into the food supply and they didn't care. So it taught me a lot about their ethics back then.
They're one of the main commodity entities on the planet Earth, right?
Yeah.
And they're the biggest privately owned.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. And they control a lot of commodities that flow here, there, and everywhere in our country.
You name it. Yeah, especially, ag commodities. Yeah, mainly the agriculture. So beef, poultry, pork. Not so much the chicken, but they're huge in the beef, poultry. I'm not sure about poultry. Beef, I know for a fact. Cargill beef is famous, But it's huge, of course. Right. Cargill feed and food, the feeds and all this. So they're huge, but... Yeah, again, right. The Somalian isn't just – it's not just there. What they seem to be doing is they're putting the Somalians in very Nordic type of country areas, not just Minnesota, but they're putting them up into Sweden. They're putting them into Maine. So it's a huge problem. And, of course, these are issues that should be dealt with immediately. I don't know why these people in federal government are doing this aside from essentially looking to destroy the United States.
And for the people that don't know out there that are listening, if you've never been to Minnesota, maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't, but the primarily who settled in Minnesota in that area, northern climes, were the Scandinavians, right?
Correct.
They were the Nordics.
That's
Nordics,
correct.
Right?
The Nordics, yes.
So then, and here's, so that's interesting what you just said. And here's another one. That company that was pushing the transgender issue. What was that name of the Target? Target's headquartered in Minneapolis too.
I believe so. Yes.
When I heard about Target doing that, I connected the dots. I was connecting the dots with the Somalians. I was like, yeah, isn't that interesting? Target's from the same place where they get all these Somalians, and this was several years back when Target did this, And then that gives us a clue. These corporations are political entities. They're political forces that are, that have economic boycott power to boycott state governments. we're not going to do business with you if you don't guys wearing dresses into the woman's bathroom.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about corporations is that they were initially a part of being incorporated is that you had to serve the public good. You know, you had to have some moral framework to serve the public good as part of your incorporating documents. You could not just be there just to be there to avoid risk, you know, from illegal activities or mistakes or something that might happen in the functioning of your business. And that's not how we are treating corporations. And we have, again, as so many callers have said here and elsewhere, we have the laws on the books to deal with everything tomorrow. If we just had a judicial system that would go after everybody and do what they're supposed to do, and they just don't do it. That's the problem we have.
Right. My understanding also about corporations is that in the beginning, corporations were formed to produce a certain outcome, and once they fulfilled that outcome, that goal, then that corporation might have dissolved. But also, they were chartered by we the people. They were in agreement that part of the deal was you're doing good for the community, the state or the
10 seconds, city. Mark.
And then after that, you're.
We're out of time, so let's just leave it on
that. Good. I'll let you go.
Yeah, thanks again for the call.
Thank you,
some time. That's Mark, everybody, out of Philadelphia, I believe. And it's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. My recording stopped. I'm not sure why it stopped, but it did stop, which is not a great thing. So that's the way it goes. We're just testing it here anyways. We'll try to get that our audio file for you afterwards somehow. But basically, guys, just want to fill you in. Chat room, of course, InsideTheEyeLive.com, InsideTheEyeLive.com. Let me check again. It's still not humming. It's doing good, but it's not humming, guys. It's not humming. I see Snippets is there. Hi, Mer Bailey's back in. Salmon MG. Guys, hello. Good morning. I hope you're doing good. What is it now? It's 10. It's now 12 o'clock. I think it's 12 o'clock on the East Coast, 12:05. Good afternoon to you. Again, it's just getting not dark here. I can still see the sun coming through the window here. Not really through the window, but kind of bouncing off my front door into the shades here. We have sun, but it'll be going down underneath the hill in about 10 to 12 more minutes. I should have turned on my light, but I forgot to do that. So I'm going to be working in dark before this segment is over. That's going to be fun. Anyways, where were we? We were talking with Mark. Thanks for the call, Mark. Again, telephone lines 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Yeah, obviously the YouTube purge, you know, that's been a very big thing. The Voxadpocalypse or whatever they're calling it. Now, it wasn't such a big thing to me. I was taken down. My website was taken down. Okay, no problem. Obviously, we had our followers. We had like 355 followers there. People subscribed to the channel. It's not like I was using the channel. I knew, quite frankly, that that channel was going to be taken down. I just knew that. So I didn't put a lot of effort into it. I also knew that it was being throttled, so people were not getting the distribution they needed to really see what I was talking about and hear what you guys are talking about when you phone in and things of that nature. So I didn't dedicate a whole lot of time to YouTube at all, simply because we knew the score. So I just didn't want to bother. But I've been following it because obviously it's a serious issue. Now, from what we can tell out there now in the alternative media sphere, YouTube is essentially killing off the news category at YouTube. So if you want to get a lot of interesting insights, you're just not getting it. You're getting, like, if you do some searches, you get recommendations. And what they're recommending is CNBC, CNN, and a few of these other mainstream sites. You know, you guys are idiots. You know, I come to YouTube to get different viewpoints. If I want to watch CNN, I'll watch CNN, and CNN sucks, so I don't want to watch it. Same with CNBC, same with Bloomberg and a few others. But I have been following it and watching how many channels are being taken down, some with sizes of 300,000, 400,000,
500,000. Then they get support and they're back up. So the battle is being waged, but it's been clear now to those of you who haven't been paying attention that the mainstream media and its technological offshoots simply cannot be trusted. YouTube as a business proposition can't be trusted unless you're going to be out there putting cute cat videos up all day or ripping things from various television shows that you just want to have some clips for. Honestly, I can't see how it's going to work. You know, I use YouTube nowadays only basically as a radio. You know, I put on these playlists that I have and I just let it run. I make sure that all the ad blockers are in place so that there are no advertisements being put through. So they are not going to be making money off of my efforts to put them on. Let them be a bandwidth hog for me. Let them carry the load while I just use the service. But I'm not going to let them make money per se off me. And that goes even for people who I might actually like and support, but I'm not going to allow you to monetize your channel so that I can then have you at Google or YouTube make money off of my effort. I'm not going to do that. So even if you are, quite frankly, getting monetized out there on YouTube, the point here is for all of us to just simply take away the chance for monetization there. Now, YouTube is losing money. They've never really made money. They're losing money, and they're going to continue to lose money. BitChute has started taking a lot of people. If you're familiar with the website BitChute, BitChute.com, they are starting to see a huge uptick in subscriber bases after this YouTube apocalypse here. And that's all a good thing. But one of the issues I've noticed is that some of these mainstream internet personalities that got whacked, so to speak, they themselves are not really our friends, meaning friends of the nationalists. I was watching one interview with the owner of Minds. Now, you can follow me on Minds at Radio ITEL. But in this particular interview, the owner of Minds was just complaining and complaining and complaining about how we got to do something about the anti-Semites. We just can't let the neo-Nazis have a run and say of our platform here, and they should be pigeonholed. And the guy that was interviewing is like, no, I really kind of don't agree with you. You know, we got a lot of that. Everybody's a neo-Nazi nowadays. So even in these, let's just say, more conservative platforms, we still find that the ownership, if you are talking about nationalist issues that happen to engage, and you cannot, guys, you cannot deal with nationalist issues without dealing with the Jewish question, actually the Jewish problem, because they are all part of the same. Now, in the process of doing all of this research, I came across some very historical pieces, like from the UK. Enoch Powell was one of those. I forget the other two names now. They kind of go off the top of my head here. But it's very interesting to listen to an Enoch Powell talk and a few of these other, not ancient, but early videoed British popular or populist politicians speaking about what it was really like before World War II and just how much the Jewish minority inside of the UK fought tooth and nail to bring the United Kingdom into war against Germany. And of course, that was a disastrous war for the United Kingdom. They lost everything. They've even lost their own sovereignty now. I don't even think they have a navy anymore, to be frank with you. I think that's been given over to the EU or soon will be. So when I look at all of these issues in history, I'm thinking, you know, we really should take some time to go back and really put things into some type of historical perspective. There should be some advanced study of history. So we're not just talking without having a view to how we got to where we are today.
when you listen to an Enoch Powell talk or some of these other politicians from the 1940s and 50s, what you learn is that the Jewish people as a political force were highly organized, highly mobilized, and highly violent, highly disruptive, exceedingly crass, exceedingly rude, and they were not going to take any type of discussion on the political platform as a fair playing field. They were going to disrupt everything. And I'm like, you know, they haven't changed a bit till today. It's just now they have power and they can dictate to us precisely what we should and shouldn't say, what we should and shouldn't do. This is all, of course, quite dangerous developments. And then when you look at the fact that these guys control so much of our governmental institutions and how we are doing so little as people to complain, to raise awareness, to fight back against Jewish domination and power, one really has to wonder just where we are headed moving forward. It's a real serious issue now that I see. When I'm looking at Trump, let's skip the Trump issue for just one second. I just had a fun story that came out of Bloomberg, and it's so true what's being said here. Guys, I'm talking to guys now. It's becoming exceedingly difficult in today's Me Too environment, highly charged feminist environment where everything is just a chance to sue the guy and destroy everything about the guy. Bloomberg Opinion put out some questions, and here are some of the things that are going now in Wall Street. No dinners with female colleagues anymore. Do not go to dinner with a female colleague. Do not sit next to them on flights. Just don't do it. It's not worth it. It's too much of a risk. Don't book hotel rooms on the same floor as a female colleague. Always take a separate floor from the female colleagues. Now, just don't do it. Do not allow them to like have the door next to you. Just don't do it. It's not worth the risk. And then avoid one-on-one meetings with women in the workplace now. Just don't do it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. See, the feminist environment has become so ingrained into the feminine side of American discourse now and social structure, really social relations between the sexes, from a rational business perspective, don't have dinner with your female colleague. Don't sit next to them on flights. Book hotel rooms on different floors and avoid one-on-one meetings. Those are just some of the ideas. And guess what? Women want to complain how it's not fair. They're not getting the chances. Well, guess what? You're making it too difficult for anybody to even deal with you. That's the backlash. That's the real reward that feminists are bringing to the female working environment now. It's getting so dangerous that you just don't want to deal with women. You can't deal with it. Imagine, and that's actually mainstreaming. That's actually on a Bloomberg Opinion poll. And that was tweeted out by Bloomberg yesterday. So, you know, women, as it says here, the Me Too environment, the feminist environment is making life even harder for women than it was already. It's not making it easier. It's basically making it to where women, look, when it comes to business, stay away from me. I don't want to deal with you. Just stay away. I want nothing to do with you. You can't say that openly. But that is the attitude that rising executives out there are having to take towards the female sex here simply because they just can't trust women anymore. That is how dangerous feminism has infiltrated America's social structure, social hierarchy between the sexes. An interesting thought there when I read that. Let's see. Trump is now doing something on a nationalist side. We thought we would at least give him some credit where some credit might be due.
We talked about the immigration issue earlier today and all the issues relative to H-1B visas, et cetera. Now what's happening, we know that we have taken in about 1% of Honduras' entire population, something to that effect. So the U.S. and Guatemalan officials are negotiating a safe third country agreement, which would bar the movement of U.S.-bound migrants through Guatemala. Now, this is a new development. Now, under the terms of this agreement, and it's still in the draft stages, migrants fleeing persecution from El Salvador and Honduras would be required to seek asylum in Guatemala. And, of course, Guatemala then is a gateway to Mexico. And then, of course, Mexico to the United States. Now, with few exceptions, those who continue north to the U.S. without testing their chances in Guatemala would be sent back to Guatemala by U.S. immigration authorities. Now, the White House finalized the draft agreement this past Monday, and it's expected to be in the hands of Guatemalan officials now. Should have been delivered 2 days ago. A safe third country deal declares that migrants must apply for asylum in the first safe country they reach. Now, that means that you should obviously do it in Mexico or Guatemala or Honduras or El Salvador or wherever you want to go, but not the United States. Now, from March to June, okay, March to June, everybody, some 350,000 migrants used Congress's loopholes, which they are Congress's loopholes, to just basically walk through the border, literally walk through the border. And of course, what does that do? Drives the wages down. There's no other way to call it, man. It takes jobs away from people that might want to work. A low-wage migrant is going to get a lot hired a lot faster because there's no penalties against the companies themselves. Now, this pending agreement with Guatemala, if it is signed, it will be the first that the U.S. has signed in a Latin American country. It's actually not a bad idea. It's essentially creating a barrier, a wall, long before these people actually get to Mexico. Now, and here's the difference now. We were talking earlier with the Italians. Pro-migration activists are, quote-unquote, reacting with alarm. Well, first of all, it's not the business of Jewish NGOs to tell us that we must take in all of these people. And quoting here, this should start setting off alarm bells. A safe third deal with Guatemala would force Honduran and Salvadoran asylum seekers to apply for asylum in Guatemala or be barred from seeking asylum in the United States. Well, what's wrong with that? It's not our business. They're not our culture. They're much more closely linked to Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala than they are to the United States. And who's tweeting this out? Aaron Reichlin Melnick of the Immigration Council. And of course, Jews have tons of these NGOs. So again, a nationalist movement moves, a nationalist government moves against the NGOs that are seeking to harm the country through mass migration. Mass migration has never succeeded anywhere on this planet. I see so many people say, oh, how many times if I had a dollar for every time socialist worked, If I had a dollar for every time socialism worked, I would have $0. And if socialism worked, I'd still have $0. Well, how many times has mass immigration actually worked for a country? It's never worked for any country. That's why if you go around to all the countries of the world, guess what? Where you have the highest degree of mass migration, you have the highest degree of crime. And then you look at the United States, you know, we've got cities that have been taken over by essentially the mafia known as the Communist Black Caucus or whatever you want to call it, like Detroit, Baltimore. The crime's going on in Memphis now. The fact is, when you look at various people in the black community, they are not good custodians of what we have developed and handed over to them. You can go to Africa now and you can see everything that the quote unquote, the Europeans have given over to the black people. And 100% of it is trashed. Nearly 100% is trashed. These people can't build societies. They can't build civilizations. So what is the point of bringing this into our countries when we are basically Western European in our mindset? There's no point to it. We need something far more radical and nationalist than a Trump can give us. We have to understand that our primary enemy is Israel. Anybody supporting Israel should be seen and viewed as an enemy of the American people. Now, I know that may sound like it's rather harsh, but it's not going to work, guys. You cannot make America great again. You cannot make the UK great again, or France, or anywhere else, if your primary focus is on serving Israel and the Jewish people. Because that's all an Israeli first agenda is. It is a service, not to the interest of the national body politic. It is a service to the state of Israel and global Judaism. Story came out of New York, and let's see if I can pull it. There was something being done on the train, you know, who knows, man. But the title says here, man hurls subway rider's phone onto tracks for recording his anti-Semitic slurs. And of course, it's written by a Jew, Weissman. And she says, a hateful, oh my gosh, can you people in the Jewish community try to write something with some intelligence? Seriously, the very first word I read is hateful. Give me a freaking break, you morons. Nothing about you and the Jewish community has any sense. People have their opinion. And the fact is that if they don't like what Jewish people are saying, it's called, I don't like what Jews are saying. I don't want to hear about hateful. What a stupid, moronic thing to say. And then it's also arrogance. There's a hateful strap hanger. Oh, I guess they're not Jews, right? They're just goyim. So this Jewess is calling a rider on a subway a hateful strap hanger. Now, of course, some of you have been on public buses. I'm assuming this is what it means. So you've been on the public buses and you've been on subways and it's crowded. So you just hang on to that strap that's hanging off the pole up there. Anyways, he says that he hurled it at an oncoming train because he was being recorded spewing. Again, there's that weaponized, disgusting, egregious word by scumbags in the Jewish community. Why did you have to hurl this noxious word into my face? Because you're a scumbag in the Jewish community? Again, I get so sick of Jews poisoning what I'm reading because of their arrogant, ignorant, hateful rhetoric all of its own. Here's this quote unquote, a 33-year-old victim. Oh, was he a victim or was he Jewish? And was he doing things that actually would make somebody upset under normal, rational circumstances? And consequently, the Jewish guy got what he deserved. These are things I have a right to know, because you just insulted me in your first paragraph with just a bunch of crap. Literally. I'm hearing cats chirping at me. I think that's Spiker. Spiker talks the most here. Anyways, guys, that broke my concentration, and it's okay because we're going into a break. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Final half hour. Thanks for joining us today, Inside the Eye, live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Kind of a quiet day for me here, obviously focusing on what we're having to do here. Not a great vacation for me, everybody, but at least I got up and turned the lights on so I can see what's going on here. That's a good thing. I don't know if you guys saw the news coming out of Portland. Something to the effect that, you know, if you're white and you call 911 and it's against a person of color, they might charge you $250 for basically being a racist. I'm not sure if anybody heard that story, but what a bizarre story. Hi, Frank. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Go ahead, Dennis. Who's accused of being a racist?
Whites. If you call 911 and the person you're calling about is black or Mexican or whatever, you can be charged for basically being a racist, and you'll be hit with a $250 fine. You know, what can I say, man? You know, we're in an upside down world. Anyways, what's on your mind?
Hey, it's probably none of my business, but hey, are we going to hear from Georgia Peach anymore?
I haven't reached out to her for, well, I did send her an email, just informative, but I haven't reached out to her for probably 2 weeks. So, you know, yeah, I think she can come back on. I have no problem for sure. I should just give her a call or give her a email and see what she's doing. I'm sure she would, if she's got the time and the inkling, sure, she would come on. So hopefully, yes.
Okay, good. I thought I'd heard something, or I might have dreamed it. Okay. I have these really vivid
dreams. You were dreaming it, man, because I didn't mention much.
Okay. Well, I thought I heard through the grapevine that maybe some people had gone after her.
Yeah, no, well, again,
it's the usual suspects.
You know, we have to always wonder what's happening to people out there. Yes, you know, she did have some health issues, which were rather fishy. How she got, you know, when she called here, she was having a very difficult time breathing, as you heard. And, you know, things happen, and you have to wonder just what happens when there are gifts at your door. So, yeah, you know, things like that can happen.
Well, I mean, you know, I've never been put in that position exactly, but I always figured if I ever was, rather than go into the shadows, I would just come out that much stronger and get on everywhere I could, and tell what was happening to me and who was behind it.
Well, this has been, of course, we have no proof of that, but this has been my tactic also. I always go, but you know how people want to resolve things internally with their families. That's not my business either. But you know, I agree. I'm one that gets out there and talks, but you know, everybody has their own circumstances, and it's their call. It's their life. It's their business. And certainly I'm not here to inject my thoughts on that one. Right. Even though I'm the same way as you.
I'm just wondering which one's more effective. I don't know. Cause like I said, I've never been put in that position. Okay. I'll get out of your way. Okay. I agree with, hate to say it, but I agree with everything you say.
All right. Thanks, dude. Appreciate it. 808. Hi, 808 Free and Awake. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Inside the Eye Live.
Yeah, Jewish con job greetings, Fetch.
Yeah. How you been, man? I'm kind of quiet today, if you've kind of noticed.
Yeah, well, you've had some great information, so I didn't really notice. So, no, I'd say you're on pace, doing well.
You know what? You know,
your only problem is the interruptions by the cat, right?
You know, I'll tell you what, man. That cat, it's like, come on, lady, get off my – and she does that. And the next thing you know, my computers are like literally frozen, and I can't figure out what she did. And she just wants to just jump here. She jumps on my lap and gets right up onto the desk, onto the keyboard. She just plops herself down. And she's very, very fat, so because she's pregnant. So basically, she takes up the whole keyboard.
Mm-hmm. And she's soon to be a relocated mama.
Well, we hope so. You know, I have to work out the logistics, guys. It's not easy. See, the thing I learned today is that generally, unless you have the facilities with the airlines, the protocol is generally not to allow the pets to have more than a 3-hour layover in any given city.
Oh, so for humane reasons?
Yes. So basically the policies are if they don't have the ability to actually give them some food and water and it's more than 3 hours, they basically don't allow the flight. So the layovers generally are between 3.5 to 4 to 10, you know, if you're just in a bad flight. So basically, yeah, that is the problem. We are looking at how to solve the layover issue. So I thought, okay, you know, it's like, you know, it's getting expensive. Okay, do I fly them to Dubai first and I hang out in Dubai and I get them entered into Dubai through the British Veterinary Institute, which I could probably do. Then I recheck them in onto a second flight. I'm like, man, this is getting to be
very inconvenient. You know? But I think you've identified a marketing niche. Maybe they need an airline that specializes in pet movement.
Well, Emirates, no, we have many, but Emirates actually does specialize in pet movement. So they Emirates flies, okay. But the issue is price, you know, also is because they are the specialists. Their prices are, they can charge their price. You want to get your pets, you pay. Whereas if I were.
Therein lies,
yeah.
I would say therein lies the problem. You know, how much are you willing to pay for your pets?
See, correct. Comes down. And, you know, and everybody wants to do it humanely and fairly and all that. And, you know, the girls are like making things like, why don't we take it to Airport Road and we can drop them at Airport Road? There's a humane society along Airport Road. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that, guys. Come on. They're going to be put into a sterile kennel type of environment where they got doors on it and they got a living space of about 2 feet by 2 feet if they're lucky. I'm not going to do that. So I have to get like IATA approved travel cases. Okay, those aren't cheap. So I got to get the IATA cases. I got to get three of those. And then I got to get the shots and everything for three of those. I have to pay for the inspection upon arrival for three of those. So when you
How
add
much
in,
time do you have to get all of this done?
A month and a half. I still have time, over a month and a half. So that's not the issue. I think everything can be done within 2 weeks relative to paperwork. And then there are certain blood tests, but they're not required for the Philippines, but other countries require specialized blood tests. The validity on these blood tests, everybody, is only 12 days. So you have to take that test within 12 days of travel, get it certified, notarized, and all that within the 12 days, and then present that to the carrier before you travel. Oh, so these there's a lot of issues that are going into this that I'm kind of learning about. And I'm thinking of hiring somebody just to do the paperwork and make sure everything is in order prior to all this going down. Because now I've learned the Philippines used to put your animals into quarantine if the paperwork
wasn't. I was going to ask you that. I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah. So, guys, if you're going to be transferring your pets overseas, you should check with the Ministry of Agriculture. Do a web search, typically, you know, importing cats to the country, and you'll be given usually some information on various websites, but then you need to go directly to the governmental website because it's the final arbiter because it's the government. And in this case, they had until January 2018, if the paperwork was not in order, the animals were quarantined for X amount of time. I don't know how much. And that's only if the paperwork was not in order. If it's an order, you pay an inspection fee at the airport and you're on your way. Thank you very much.
I love it.
No quarantines. However, now this is where it gets touchy. If your paperwork is not in order, they don't quarantine. They send it back to the country of origin on your dime.
Oh, reversal. You can't have that.
So now you're talking about an extra flight back home. And you're going to have to go with them because you got to pick them up at the airport because you're not going to be able to get anybody into the terminals to receive the animals.
Oh, boy.
So it is a very tricky maneuver here that if you don't pull it off correctly, it can really become a financially disastrous little endeavor. So be very careful when you move your pets overseas. That's what I'm learning. Wow. Be very, very
international.
Any type of international movement. There are international conventions in play. So you're going to have to get them microchipped with an RFID ISO microchip with details about the animal. And
you see, Fetch, wouldn't it be nice if the Emirates Airlines could take care of all of this from start to finish? You don't do nothing. You just sit back and relax, Mr. Fetch. We got you covered.
No, what they are, they have what's called GSAs, General Service Agents, in every country. They can't do that. So what you have to do is reach
General
out.
General Service Agreements? Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, the General Service Agreements. And then, of course, under that are the licensed agents who then handle it in country to country.
Right. Well, okay. Well, third party, whatever. But the point is, you don't have the hassle. They take care of all of that. They become a clone of you.
Again, that's available. I mean, I've already talked to one of the airlines, and they said we have a facilitator in Jordan that you could hire, and then they can handle the paperwork. But they said, sir, we're sorry, but the layover for us is only 3 hours because we can't feed them. We can't give them water.
Oh, okay. Back to the original quandary.
Right. Yeah. So he said, now, because of that, you know, we can't help you. Try Emirates. They're very sophisticated. Emirates is a huge airline here in the Middle East. Of course, you see them in America. Fly Emirates. You know, you see their advertising right, yeah. even in America.
They're
a huge company, guys. These guys are massive. Okay. They're the national carrier for the Emirates. And Emirates is like a trade, like Singapore. It's a very big hub for freight and trading, international trading, finance. So it's a huge hub. And
right.
It's really Dubai is the real multicultural experiment in the world. Dubai mm-hmm. is designed to be a multicultural experiment. And it's right. very successful. But it's right. successful because it's not so much the multiculturalism, but you're bringing in the best of the best. And it really, yeah, it's, in other words, you can have a multicultural society if everybody's at 120, 105, 115, 140 IQ. It gets real hard to have a multicultural.
They have to be productive in whatever way, because you still need janitors, people like that, you know.
Correct.
They contribute to the society.
That is correct. That's what makes it work. And they have a sound, rational immigration policy equally, to where if you're going to bring these people in, there has to be an economic need for that. And if there's no economic need, the visa slots are simply eliminated. They just don't bring it in with a guaranteed increase of 3.7% every year. No way. Right. Some years it's higher and some years are lower. Some years they don't have any slots available. If you want to come from Egypt and you're in the accounting field, we don't have any slots for you this year. Sorry, we're trying to get rid of what we got. And by year's end, since every year in the Middle East you must redo your paperwork, it's an expensive proposition. Obviously, you're making money. It's part of business. You don't care. You're making money. But if you're not making right. money like us here, it becomes a very expensive proposition. You know, you're basically supporting the governments and you're getting nothing from the country back except for what, safety and nice weather. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then your police are chasing everybody down. That's not what I'm paying for. I'm not paying for your police to harass me every 20, you know, every 2 or 3 days. I'm just not paying for that, with all due respect. Right. I wouldn't expect anybody to pay for that.
So and right now they're focusing on Filipinos,
Sri Lanka, India. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically Southeast Asia, because they're easy to identify. It's harder to see an Egyptian or a Syrian or an Iraqi than it is somebody from Southeast Asia. It's very easy to pick off a Southeast Asian. It's like, you know, in an all white society, a black guy's going to stick out like a sore thumb, going to be hard to hide.
Right.
Especially
and hard to escape.
Yeah. And we know that you're there basically as a guest worker. We know you're a guest worker. Right. So, okay, where's your papers? You know, when, what do you do? If you don't have papers, you're immediately arrested.
Oh boy. It's like Eastern Europe back in the day.
Yeah. In a way. Yeah. It does feel like that Stasi effect here. So, you know, I've got people like, who are you to ask these questions, man? Come on. You know, let people breathe a little bit, you know, don't assume everybody's bad. You know, there are a lot of bad people here, but there's a lot of issues going on in the Middle East. This whole thing with Iran and the Houthis and Yemen and ISIS being defeated.
False flags.
And then you've got
tankers.
Yeah. And then you've got
so tedious after a while.
The deal of the century, though, by the way, is off, everybody. I don't know if I raised that issue, but the deal of the century is off. It's off the table.
What was that?
The deal of the century was what Trump was going to announce on behalf of Netanyahu to solve for once and for good the Palestinian problem here in the Middle East. And that's off the table now. It's not going to be raised at least for another 4 or 5 months, 6 months. Netanyahu's going to first have to bring in a new government. He's got to stand for election again and then try to form a government. And so the deal's off. And nobody's accepting it here in the Middle East. Nobody's accepting it.
You said after
right
four
now
months,
it's well right now it's off. It's off the table. It's no longer being talked about.
Let's hope they change that. But you know that's why I say it's probably the longest con in world history, and we're under a fully established social, economic, political, and religious control system, Fetch, and that's the problem. And I got a philosophical question for you.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Does the fact that the Jews so effectively control us support their premise of superiority?
Yes, it does. To them, absolutely.
So maybe they are superior.
No, they're not. They are using subterfuge, and they're allowing violations of law and assassinations and things we are not. Now, if you want to call that superior, okay.
Machiavellian.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm not going to argue because that's how they're looking. They say, well, we don't care. We have control. What do you want? We're superior to you. We have control, not you. So, yes, in their view, it does support their superiority. And of course, now they want to. And of course, we're trying to say, okay, let's prevent another pogrom. Let's prevent another problem out there. And they're saying, well, you can't do that because it's anti-Semitic. We're saying, well, okay, you know, you've lost this battle so many different times. I'm not sure you're going to be able to support this anymore. You know, and as they've always lost, they've never been able to stay anywhere because their tyranny becomes so oppressive that it becomes something that people will fight against.
Yeah, and but that's just a thing. You got to get to that point in the wake of their destruction.
It's getting there. Again, it's getting there because it is getting there because so many voices now see the problem. And we're talking about it everywhere. So we got to rush through these anti-Semitism laws so that nobody can criticize us. Whatever,
right,
dudes.
Right.
Whatever,
the
dudes.
Bandage on the problem.
You know, like here, this article I just told you, the black on Jew crime now in the Brooklyn and Bronx areas is skyrocketing. Because you
really?
It's skyrocketing. It's almost becoming off the charts. Blacks can't stand Jews. Okay, fine. Let's support our black friends out there that's, you know.
It's what I always said. We need unity, right? We can
Yes, exactly. You know, I don't care what you do to that rabbi. Why should I? Because that rabbi sure as heck doesn't care what something happens to me.
Right. Hey, Fetch, I don't want to hog the call. I think you got another caller, so maybe I should just go and let him
If he's still on the line, I can't see him. But okay, if he's still on the line, sure. Maybe
so
you see it and I can't
there,
see it.
Caller?
Yes.
Well, okay, so I'll make way. Talk to you later, Fred.
All right, thanks, man. I couldn't even see the call here, guys. I did see the area code come in, 207. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Line.
Yes, Dennis, how are you?
I'm fine. Oh, this is Frank up
Frank
in Maine.
G from Maine. How are you?
Oh, I'll put your name on my contact list for the future. You know, I'm doing good. Doing well, thank you very much.
Great.
It's a little hot now.
Great, your show's been wonderful, as always.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, I had sent you some material about...
you did. I'm going to give you...
One is, of course... Yeah.
Go ahead. Just go ahead and talk about what you sent. Go ahead.
Yeah, of course, you know, we're being flooded here like crazy. And they just passed some law that said that we can't refuse anybody. So... One of the things that's happening is it's adversely affecting tourism, and that's one of the major industries here. So maybe when people are hit in the pocketbook, that will cause them to rise up a little bit.
Well, you would think so. I would not go visit Maine under the conditions you're talking about. Why would I put myself at risk for that? And Maine's a beautiful place,
exactly.
But it's beautiful if it's quiet and peaceful and organized and well run. Who needs a Somalian mafia running around? Basically, who needs it? I don't need it.
Exactly.
I don't trust
spreading
it.
Diseases.
Yeah,
even to care for, and the crime's out of control.
So yeah, you know,
and
Bar Harbor ain't the
Lumbered.
Bar Harbor is not the same, what do you call it, the same lobster ground it used to be, huh?
Exactly. It's not the idyllic getaway place it once was. You see, you know, Somalians and other sub-Saharans roaming the streets.
And it's like, what are you here for?
How did they get there? You know?
Yeah, what are you doing here? I'm serious. It's like, why are you even here? Because there's nothing about my country that you actually like. There's nothing about us you like. There's nothing about our way of life that they like. Nothing. So why are you here? That's like me going to Somalia.
Exactly.
You know, seriously, it'd be like me sitting there in Mogadishu. And I may even have surprises for you guys. I may go to Somaliland, which is the hidden site of Somalia that nobody knows of. I may go there. I may even broadcast from there. I've been invited by their Ministry of Interior. I may go. But it's not Somalia. It's Somaliland. But I'm like, why are these Somalians right in my country? And you think I'm going to go to Somaliland and pretend like I'm going to run their government? I'm going to go into their cities and say, you owe me housing, you owe me money, you owe me everything, and I'm going to just hang out on your street corners and just be non-productive doing nothing? Because I guarantee you that's what you're seeing. You're just seeing a bunch of Somalians hanging on a street corner like you just went to South Central LA. There's no jobs, nothing to do for them, and they just hang out.
Yeah. The public housing is starting to look like the Bronx, you know?
Anyways.
They're trying to take our guns away. Bloomberg and others are sending lobbyists constantly to the state legislators. And it was in the paper that they, which I never read, but I happened to see this one when I was waiting for an appointment, said that they were spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year just on gun control lobbying in the state.
And imagine if we put that $100,000 or $100 million into productive infrastructure for our communities instead of trying to use it to destroy it. Why don't they? This is the problem I have with Jewish people. Why don't they use their wealth and influence to make things better for everybody? They don't do it.
Exactly. Exactly. And they spend billions on this mandatory Holocaust, white guilt,
yes,
and other training in the public schools and in colleges. And they, you know, the wealthy Jews build these, put these buildings up in the universities and force the universities to, and the professors to teach these courses where, by the way, my son just graduated a couple of years ago from Worcester Polytech Institute, which is kind of like MIT. And they used to have them force them in almost every class to write papers not discussing white politics or anything like that, but going on the premise that whites are guilty, whites do have privilege, and so on and so forth. And they get graded on how well they prove or demonstrate in their thesis, about how whites are guilty and we deserve to be genocided. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I can and I can't as a student because I would have rebelled against that. I was a really strong kid.
I couldn't believe it.
I was a really strong kid and I would hold my own against any professor because I actually didn't meet too many professors that were actually smarter than I was. You know what I mean? They were certainly pretty good, but they weren't smarter than me. They didn't have the conceptual talent I had as a kid. I was like a bright guy when I was young. So I would not have stood for this type of crap at all. I was already an anti-elite establishment type of guy coming out of high school. So I was already, my ears were pricked all the way back when I was 18, 17, 18. And there's no way I would have stood for crap like that. And that's the problem. The kids nowadays don't know how to even fend for themselves. I'm sorry, but they got to take some responsibility here equally. And I know it's difficult, but there has to be some balance here. I mean, the kids got to figure out a way equally.
Yes, exactly. They can't just blame the boomers. They have to take responsibility.
Yes, it's like,
critically think, do some critical thinking.
Yeah, I hate when I just hear these college people start blaming boomers. Like, you know what? I can't imagine blaming my parents for the problems on my campus. It just never would have occurred to me. It never would have occurred to me to blame my parents for problems on my campus. How stupid is that? And they're like, oh, it's your fault. And I'm like, my parents were lower middle class, hardworking German Irish Americans that this type of content was way beyond their pay scale, way beyond. So why would I hold them responsible for things that's beyond their pay grade? Frank, thanks for calling. That's the end of the show. Inside
well,
the
thank you very much.
All right, thanks for calling, Frank. That's it.
You're doing a fantastic job. Thank
all
you.
All right, thanks so much, bye everybody now. And thanks to all of you listening out there. It's the Fetch back inside the iLive primetime Thursday. Check out
Fetch on Fridays, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. You can go to AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com for that. See ya.